This episode is brought to you by the Ecolab Science Certified Program. With Ecolab's training and products, businesses can give their staff the tools they need to help maintain a safer and healthier space for their customers. Because better science equals better business. Find out how the Ecolab Science Certified Program can help your establishment achieve a scientific clean by visiting ecolab.com/seal.
This is your tech news briefing for Tuesday, August 30th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We store so much in digital form these days. Our messages, our photos, our entertainment. But the drives where we keep all that information are not unlimited. And after decades of progress, efforts to improve them are running up against the physical limits of matter itself. So how can an increasingly digitized world overcome this problem? On today's show, Dr. Brian Michael Murphy, the Dean of the College at Bennington College, who's got a new book out on this topic, joins us after these headlines. NASA's plans to return to the moon have been postponed. Artemis 1, which was set to launch yesterday morning, was delayed due to a problem with one of the rocket's engines. NASA Administrator Bill Nelson addressed the technical issues in a live stream.
We don't launch until it's right. And in fact, they've got a problem with the gases going on the engine bleed on one engine. You can't go. There are certain guidelines. And I think it's just illustrative that this is a very complicated machine, a very complicated system, and all those things have to work.
The agency says it needs time to figure out why one of the engines didn't get to the right temperature range that was needed to attempt liftoff. The next available opportunity for takeoff is this Friday. The delay is the latest setback to a mission that's already over budget and behind schedule. We covered what's at stake in the Artemis 1 launch in depth last Friday. So if you haven't listened to that yet, be sure to cue it up next. Elon Musk's legal team has subpoenaed Twitter's former head of security, Peter Zatko, who filed a whistleblower complaint against Twitter, alleging the company was failing to protect users' privacy. Musk is seeking documents and communications about how Twitter measures and deals with fake and spam accounts, and information about the company's alleged security vulnerabilities. That's according to legal filings made public Monday. Musk's lawyers are also seeking to depose Zatko. Twitter has sued Musk to force him to go through with his $44 billion takeover of the company, a deal Musk says he wanted to walk away from because Twitter hadn't provided enough detail on fake accounts. Twitter said Zatko's complaint is riddled with inaccuracies and lacks important context. The company declined to comment on the subpoena. A lawyer for Zatko said he will comply with the legal obligations of the subpoena. The Federal Trade Commission has filed a lawsuit against the data broker Cochava, alleging it sold information that could be used to trace people to abortion clinics, addiction recovery facilities, and other sensitive locations. The FTC is seeking to stop Cochava from selling this geolocation data and require the Idaho-based company to delete the information it's collected. Cochava filed a preemptive lawsuit earlier this month against the FTC, claiming the regulator was ignoring privacy improvements the company had made to its practices and doesn't understand how its business works. The lawsuit against Cochava and other FTC investigations like it are a sign of the tougher stance the regulator is taking on data privacy under Chair Lina Khan. And Honda and LG Energy say they plan to build a nearly $4.5 billion electric vehicle battery factory in the U.S. The joint venture is the latest between a car maker and a battery supplier in an effort to expand capacity by sharing upfront costs. Honda and LG plan to begin construction of the factory early next year and start mass production by the end of 2025. Sources say the factory is planned for somewhere in Ohio. All right, coming up, hard disk drives are reaching their physical limits to hold all the data we want to store. So what's the future of data storage? We'll discuss after the break.
The energy landscape is changing before our eyes. With rising oil and gas prices, alternative fuel options are looking more attractive. But is your portfolio keeping up? At Global X ETFs, our approach to investing in renewables looks beyond what you might have considered. Visit globalxetfs.com to learn how you can invest in the rise of clean energy.
Compared with storing records in an old filing cabinet, digital storage can feel unlimited. And storing your favorite pictures in the cloud feels more durable than putting them in a photo album. But the hard drives behind digital storage can break. They can experience mechanical failure, or their formats could become obsolete. They can be harmed by dust or heat, or even something computer scientists call bit rot. But the speed at which we're digitizing all sorts of information isn't slowing down. So how can the world keep up? Joining us to discuss that is Dr. Brian Michael Murphy. He's the dean of the college at Bennington College. He wrote about this issue for the Wall Street Journal and in his new book, We the Dead, Preserving Data at the End of the World. Hi, Brian. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with some background. Can you lay out kind of how a hard drive works? What's going on inside them?
Yeah, so on a hard disk drive, one of the things that's happening is there is a platter where the data is stored, and that platter is spinning very, very, very quickly. And it spins quickly when you write data to it, and it spins very quickly anytime you want to access that data, and the data is going to be read, and then it pops up magically on your computer screen. But mechanically, or I should say physically, what's happening is at a microscopic level, there are little tiny bits of material that the platter is made of. And those little bits, each one of them holds a little tiny piece of information that's either positive or negative. So if you've seen The Matrix and you've seen all the ones and zeros going up and down the wall, that's referring to how the computer reads those magnetic charges. And so that's how it's made. And so it has to spin very quickly, and it has to spin very, very smoothly for the whole process to work.
I mean, that sounds simple enough, but there can be these big problems that run through it, right? I mean, talk us through what some of those are.
Yes, some of the problems occur if there's any kind of mechanical failure that goes on with the mechanical parts of the disk. So there are ball bearings in there. Those have to be lubricated. There's a read-write head that can malfunction. If there's any dust, like if there was a problem in manufacturing the disk and there's dust inside and it gets in those components, it can completely ruin everything. Other challenges are the things that have always plagued media going back to ancient times, right? Heat. Even a microscopic form of decay called bit rot, we think that like, oh, paper decays or even film decays, but, you know, even metal decays after a long enough time, or it can even destabilize a bit to where it loses its magnetic charge. And at that point, you've lost the data.
What efforts are being made to address those problems?
Well, what has driven a lot of the changes in this technology over time is the desire to store more and more data on smaller and smaller spaces. So new data centers are being built all the time. But the problem is the form factor of hard drives and actually the casing in which they're stored in data centers, that doesn't really change. There's not much flexibility around that. So you've got to figure out ways to increase what's called the areal density of the hard drive, storing more in the same amount of space. For the past few decades, we've done a very good job of increasing the areal density of hard disk drives. But those little segments that the platter is divided into, those bits that I mentioned before, they get charged either positive or negative, they're becoming so small that they're unstable. To where if there's any temperature fluctuation, the particle can misbehave and actually flip its charge from negative to positive or positive to negative. And that's disastrous for a hard drive because that means that whatever data you wrote into that charge is now lost. So what's happening is they're figuring out ways to create platters out of harder material, but that means you need more energy to actually write the data. So they have like lasers or microwave-assisted recording technology. But the main problem is that you can only go so small with those bits and increase the areal density so far. We've kind of reached that point. So the creativity is still there, but it's really, really hard to innovate beyond that.
So how do they get around this hurdle? I mean, are we just up against a wall and we're going to have to start, I don't know, bringing out our filing cabinets and our like cellophane photo albums again?
Well, I'd be all for that because I love filing cabinets and cellophane photo albums, but that's more personal preference. I think what's happening is there are a lot of scientists who are trying to think beyond the hard drive. And the next frontier is really DNA data storage. So scientists have figured out how to store the binary code, the ones and zeros, in the proteins of DNA. And that is the most dense data storage material that we know of. A few years ago, when a lot of writing was coming out about some of the breakthroughs that happened at Harvard and the University of Washington and Microsoft, they said that the entire internet could be stored in an amount of DNA that would fit inside a shoebox. And of course, DNA can be dehydrated or frozen, so it could last for billions of years if you're concerned about permanence.
I got to jump in here. Just, you know, DNA, it makes people think, what, you're storing this in me, in a human? What kind of DNA are we talking about here?
So up to this point, as far as we know, scientists have created synthetic DNA chains in which they have stored data. It can be any kind of data. Just like a computer, you can store something that's text-based or image or video. You can do that in DNA storage. Scientists at Harvard also figured out how to sort of insert data of a video into a living E. coli organism and were able to actually retrieve the video even after several generations of reproduction in that E. coli strain. So there are some other big dreams about sort of DNA-based biorecorders going into people's bodies and things like that. But as far as we know, that hasn't happened yet, and it's definitely not at a point where it's scalable.
What about manufacturing hard disks up in space? You know, we've talked about that on the show before. We've heard from experts that this is going to be a way to more efficiently create hard drives. Is this something realistically that experts are turning to?
Well, it's been a long-standing dream to have a space where you don't have to worry about dust or any other problems arising in the manufacturing. When you're talking about precision manufacturing, you can even go back to the colonial period in America and watchmakers putting their shop three or four stories up so that they were further away from all the dust on the street, because dust absolutely ruins fine-tuned mechanical components. So the clean room as a technology is a space where you've eliminated all of that dust, and that's where, you know, microchips and all of these really high-tech components are made. So what's appealing about space, I think, is that there's a dream that space is kind of like the ultimate clean room. I think right now it's a powerful narrative and there is some funding behind it, but I think we're many years off from seeing something like that actually happen.
All right, Dr. Brian Michael Murphy from Bennington College, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you like the show, how about leaving us a 5-star rating and telling a friend about it? And if you want more tech news, check out our website, wsj.com. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Wall Street Journal editorial page is always on top of the latest from Washington and around the world. I'm Kyle Peterson, and you can join me, Paul Jagot, Kim Strassel, and our colleagues on the Potomac Watch podcast each Monday through Friday. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app.